A number of years ago, Rabbi Simcha HaKohen Cook, the chief rabbi of Rehovot, shared the following humorous story with our family, and he said that the story is told of three Hasidim who were completely enamored by their respective rebbes, and each one claimed that he was following the only authentic and legitimate one. So, what do Hasidim do when they're trying to prove their point? So they each try to share Rebbe Shemovsim about their rebbe and to impress upon their friends how amazingly talented their particular rebbe is. So the first one says, you know, my rebbe was once traveling on the horse and buggy, like all good stories happen, and suddenly there was a terrifying downpour, unbelievable deluge, and they didn't know what to do, because obviously the horse cannot travel in the mud and in the rain. The rebbe steps out of his wagon, and he offers a very short cryptic tefillah, and within seconds, there's rain to the right, rain to the left, and a clear dry path in the middle. So the second chassid's trying to figure out how's he going to outdo the first. So he says, you know, let me tell you a story. One time my Rebbe was traveling and it was getting dark outside. And obviously the horse can't travel when it's dark outside. He can't see where he's going. So the Rebbe steps out of his wagon. He offers a very short tefillah on the side of the road, and you wouldn't believe it. Suddenly it was dark to the right, dark to the left, and clear sunlight in the middle. So not knowing how to overwhelm the first two Hasidim, the third one says, you want to hear a real mufis? I'll tell you something. One time my Rebbe was traveling and he was also on his horse and buggy, and it was a late Friday afternoon, and it was almost the Shkia, it was almost Shabbos, and he didn't know what to do, so he gets off of his wagon, and he offers a short tefillah, and suddenly, you wouldn't believe it. It was Shabbos to the right, Shabbos to the left, and Friday in the middle. So he kept going. So it's a great story, but in reality, Rav Kook said that if we want to think about what really would be the greatest miracle of them all, what would be the greatest movis, he said it would be a person who lives in our world, and who has learned to navigate with all the craziness that we inhabit in our world, a society that is so laden with obscenity, a culture that is so corrupt and contaminated everywhere we go, and all we see in front of us is chol to the right, chol to the left, and we as Jews have an obligation to figure out how to miraculously carve a path of Kodesh, of Shabbos in the middle. And he said that really is the mandate, that is the duty and the obligation of every Jew living on this earth. And that, in fact, is the greatest miracle of them all. You'll notice in Parshas Kedoshim, we have a mitzvah that the Torah describes to us as Kedoshim Tiyu. You have a mitzvah that you should be holy. Now, Rashi comments on that pasuk, Parshazu Bahakel Nemra. This mitzvah, this idea was stated in front of the entire Jewish community, Bahakel, when everybody was there. One of the Mefarshim explains that perhaps what it means is that being a Kadosh, what does it mean to be holy? Being holy does not mean that we swear to celibacy. Being holy does not mean that we live a life that is disconnected with society and humanity. Being holy means that a person finds themselves fully engaged with the global community. A person who lives life bahakel with everybody else, facing all the allurements and all the temptations of our society and the world that we live in, enjoying the times with our wives and our families and our community, and yet doing all of that, b'kedusha u'b'tahara, learning how to live that life, engage with the community, engage with society, but learning how to do all of it as a true kadosh, as a true person who learns and understands what it means to be holy and to be sanctified and to elevate every moment of life to be greater than whatever you see around you in the world that is so infused with chol to the right, chol to the left. The Gemara Maseches Sukkah Daf Chaf Ches tells the very famous story of Hillel HaZaken. So the Gemara there says that the great Hillel HaZaken had 80 Talmidim. Shmonim Talmidim hayu lo leHillel HaZaken. And the Gemara there tells us about who these Talmidim were. So the Gemara says 30 of them were on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. 30 of them were on the level of the great Yehoshua ben Nun. And the Gemara tells us that 20, the remaining 20, were somewhere in between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua ben Nun. So it's a pretty amazing group of students. The weakest of those Talmidim, says the Gemara, was the great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And the strongest of the Talmidim was Yonasan ben Uzziel. So listen to the way that the Gemara describes who the weakest of the Talmidim actually was. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Let's hear a little bit about what he was able to do. What was so unique about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was not the strongest? He was the weakest of this group of 80, says the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew every Mishnah, every Gemara, every Halacha, every Agada, every Drush. It's just a start. Then the Gemara says he knew the language of the trees, he knew how to communicate with the animals, he knew even how to communicate with the malachim, says the Gemara. He could answer every question sent to him from another yeshiva. He was able to communicate even with the shadim, says the Gemara. Okay, so that's the description of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who again was the weakest of the students. asked the Gemara what he's left to say about Yonas of Menuziel. What was he able to accomplish that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was not? Says the Gemara, Kol of ha-pareach alav miyad nisraf. When a bird flew in his immediate vicinity, it would get burnt, it would get scorched from his extreme degrees of holiness. And Rashi says, perhaps what it means is that the Malachim were so interested in hearing what Rabbi Yonas of Menuziel had to say, that when anybody else came in the sphere where the Malachim were, they got burnt up. It seems that he was a very extremely holy person. But what the Gemara does not address is, if that was Yonas of Menuziel, and that was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, look, both of these great students chose to study Torah under the leadership of Hillel HaZaken. It must be that they saw something incredible in the teacher Hillel HaZaken. It must be that there was something that Hillel had that they did not. So what the Gemara does not tell us is, what is left to say about the great Hillel? How can you explain what he contributed to the world? Why did his Talmidim choose to study by him if they on their own seem to be so much greater than one can ever imagine? Explains the Kutzker Rebbe, his very beautiful style, he says, the highest level of spirituality is not to be like Yonas of Menuziel. Yes, it's true, the Gemara tells us that Yonas of Menuziel was burning all the birds, anyone that came in his vicinity was getting scorched because of his extreme degrees of holiness. What was amazing about Hillel HaZaken, what was great about the fact that he was the leader of the Jewish people, was that Hillel was a person who learned how to be mitzamtzem his great degrees of holiness and how to be a person that did not burn all of those that came into his surroundings. He was a person that learned what Kedoshim Tiyu means, Parsha Zu Bahakel Nemra. Hillel understood that to be a Kadosh is wonderful, and that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam expects of all of us, but you cannot make your community pay the price for your being a Kadosh. Hillel understood that when the birds come in his vicinity, they do not get burnt, because you have to be integrated into society, you have to be a person who understands how to deal with the reality that you live in. And that, says the Kutzker, was the greatest madrega of Kedusha. That was the holiness of Hillel HaZaken, and that is why his Talmidim chose to study by him. And I dare say, maybe that is the reason why Hillel's opinions are mentioned on almost every daf and shas. Because Hillel was a man for the ages. Hillel was a man who understood what it means to live a life in the society that we live in, integrating himself with the entire world, blending himself in with the divine and the celestial as he was learning, but at the same time learning how to also live the world of reality that we are all expected to live in. So Parshas Truma, we know, started the process of building the Mishkan. And there we're told, Va'asuli Migdash V'shachanti V'socham. Finally we come, all these Parshios, we have the Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisisa, Vayakel, Bakude, all describing the great details of how the Mishkan was built, and finally this week we're finished. What was it that Moshe Rabbeinu says in our Parsha? Vayivarech Osam Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu in our Parsha chooses to bless the Jewish people when the building project is finally completed. And what blessing, what bracha does he give? So Rashi quotes from the Medrash, Yihi Ratzon, may it be your will, Shetishra Hashchina B'Masi Yadecha. May it be the will that the Shechina will reside in this beautiful edifice, in this Beis HaMikdash, in this Mishkan that we have finally constructed. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina come and rest its presence in our building that we have constructed. So the Ksav Sofer, who is the son of the Chassam Sofer, points out that as beautiful of a tefillah as this is, he says there is something very unusual about it. Two questions. Number one, he says, generally, when you're offering a tefillah, you say, Yihi Ratzon Milifnei Avinu Shebashamayim. You direct the tefillah somewhere. You say who it is that you're trying to address. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu just says, Yihi Ratzon Shetishra Shechina B'Masi Yadechem. Why does he leave out the most important part of the sentence? Why does he leave out God's name, the Ribbono Shel Olam? Say, we offer a tefillah to you, God, that you should reside your Shechina in this Beis HaMikdash. And number two, he says, don't we know from the very beginning of the story, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself promised, Ve'asu li migdash v'shachanti b'socham. If you will follow the rules, if you will listen to Moshe Rabbeinu's instructions, and you will do everything kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe, you will construct the Mishkan with all the right kavana, with all the right intention, and doing everything exactly to the details of how Moshe Rabbeinu told you to do it, then I, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will promise you, v'shachanti b'socham. I in turn will come and reside my Shechina in that building that you will construct. So why is it that now at the very end, Moshe Rabbeinu finds it necessary to offer a specific tefillah God already promised that that was going to happen. Why do we need this tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu if it was going to happen on its own? Did Moshe Rabbeinu doubt that God would follow through with his promise? Chalila! Never would Moshe Rabbeinu doubt the Ribono Shel Olam's promise. He knew that he would follow through. Suggests the beautiful Vart of the Ksam Sofer. He says, perhaps what Moshe Rabbeinu meant here was not a tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather a plea and a tefillah to the Bnei Yisrael themselves, to the Jewish community. And that was the following. After all the time and all the effort and all the energy and all the money that you've spent trying to build this beautiful, sacred, holy edifice that now has become the Mishkan, after all that you've dedicated and you've spent weeks and months just coming every day to listen to the instructions and everyone gave of all their talents and everything that they had for a purpose as exalted as this, Moshe Rabbeinu says, now I understand that you're all going to go home. Now I understand everyone's going back to work. Everyone's going back to the daily routine, to the daily activities. And Moshe Rabbeinu begs the Jewish people and he asks them, Yihi Ratzon, may it be your will, Shetishra HaShchina B'Masi Yadeichem. Will the Shechina be able to find a comfortable place in your work, in your life? Not when you're surrounded by Moshe Rabbeinu and building a Mishkan and everyone's focus is on a purpose as holy as this. Obviously the Shechina is going to be there. Do you as a Jew have the ability to infuse God's presence into your Maisei Yadayim, into every daily activity, into every business meeting that you have, into every encounter that you have with the world, with all of your associates, with all of your family and all of your friends? Can the Shechina find a comfortable place to be there as well? Moshe Rabbeinu is here offering a tefillah not to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather he's asking the Jewish people to consider whether or not the Shechina is able to find a comfortable place even when we step away from building the Mishkan, even when we're living the day-to-day life. And I once saw a comment of Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz where he suggests, when we read the Megillah, so we say, Ish Yehudi haya b'shushan habira u'shmo Mordechai. So Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz suggests that there were two different places. There was Shushan, and there was Shushan Habira. What's the difference? Shushan is like saying New York State. Shushan Habira is the capital. It's Albany. That's where everything's going on. All the tumulers, everyone's living there. That's where all the politics are going on. He suggests that was the same. Shushan was the province. Shushan Habira was the hub. That was Washington, D.C., where everything was happening, all the action. And Mordechai HaTzadik lived in the middle of all of that. Mordechai HaTzadik lived not in Shushan. He lived in Shushan Habira, in the capital. He was politicking with everybody else. And Mordechai had himself involved with the government. And he was a person who understood Shivim Lashonos. And he was a man who was so accomplished and he was so involved. And yet, he was one of the Rashi HaSanhedrin. He was one of the heads of the Jewish community. And he was known to be a great Talmud Chacham. There, writes Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, is where we see the greatness of how we are introduced to the great Mordechai HaTzadik. Why do we care where he lived? We all know who Mordechai is. No. Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, the greatness of him was Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan Habira. Yes, he can be living in the middle of Manhattan, in the middle of Albany, in the middle of Washington, D.C., rubbing shoulders with all the corrupt politicians and with everybody who's doing everything wrong. But yet Mordechai emerged to be the Ish Yehudi, that Jew who upheld his values, who was able to show the world what it means to live a life committed to the Jewish values, what it means to live a life of an elevated plateau, of living the life of Mordechai HaTzadik in Shushan Habira. That is the way we're introduced to him, because that is the greatest way that you can introduce the tzaddik of that generation to show he wasn't living alone. It's very easy to be a tzaddik when you live in your own little corner and you don't interact with the world. Let's see, is a Jew able to be a tzaddik even when he's living in Shushan Habira? Even when he steps away like our parsha speaks about, you walk away from the experience of the Mishkan, are you still able to be that person who is Yehi Ratzon Shetishra HaShchina B'Masi Yadechem? Can God find a comfortable place in our homes, not in shuls, not in the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMedrash, but in every single person's home, in every single person's office, in every business dealing that we're involved in every interaction we have with our spouse and our children, and in all that we do, will the Shechina be comfortable there as well? And Reb Chaim Yaakov Goldach takes it a step further, and he writes in his Sefer, Asufos Ma'arachos, why is it that by Vayavo Amalek, when they come to the story of Amalek, we say that the reason why they were able to start up with the Jewish people was Rafu Yedehem Min HaTorah. What do you mean? Rafu Yedehem Min HaTorah? Really? Do you not think Moshe Rabbeinu gave the best Afyomi Shir in the world? Do you not think Moshe Rabbeinu gave the most enlightening Shirim and he was inspiring everybody? What do you mean nobody was learning? Of course they were learning. How can they not learn? Moshe Rabbeinu's knocking on your door every day to wake you up for Shacharis, to come to the Shir. Do you think people ignored him? Of course they came. Says Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwich, no, that was not the issue. It was not the fact that nobody was learning. Everyone was learning, more so than in any other generation. They had Moshe Rabbeinu as the great teacher. He was the Melamed HaTorah at the time, and obviously people flocked to go hear him. The problem was Rafu Yideyem, the Masa Yideyem, the way that they interacted with others. Not when they were in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, when they stepped away from him, and now everybody was on their own, and they were using their hands, like the Gemara says, my Siyadayim is my business dealing, my acquisitions, all of my business dealings that I'm involved in every day. That was the issue, and that's when Amalek had the upper hand. When Rafu Yideyem Min HaTorah, when we didn't have the ability to translate the values and the messages of what a Torah Jew is supposed to live like in every aspect of his life, that is when we have the challenge of Amalek, because a Jew has let down his guard and not allowed the Ribono Shel Olam in. We have not invited him into our daily activities, to all the things that we do. We have only limited his presence to the Beis HaKnesses, to the Beis HaMedrash, to Moshe Rabbeinu Shir, and we don't understand that the values that we've been taught in all those places are ones that need to come with us in every experience that we have after we step away from that as well.